content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Usech-Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month, we will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. Our guest today is Elaine Whitford. Elaine Whitford is the Executive Director for the Center of Volunteer Caregiving. Let me tell you about this vivacious and dedicated woman. Elaine's first career was in education law, where she represented public school systems with a focus on employment and special education disability law. After 16 years of practice and making partner in two law firms, she decided that her volunteer jobs with Junior League of Raleigh, involvement with fundraising events, and chairing the Honored Guest Committee for the 1999 Special Olympics World Games in Raleigh were what really got her up in the morning. She was also associated with the YWCA of the Greater Triangle, the Auditory Learning Center, and the Center for Voter Education and Disability Rights, North Carolina. So she turned her volunteer work into her second career. Elaine joined the Center for Volunteer Caregiving as Executive Director in June 2018, bringing 20 years of nonprofit leadership to the position. Before joining the Center for Volunteer Caregiving, she worked for 8 years as the Director of Development at Disability Rights, North Carolina. As a volunteer and a professional, Elaine has led many successful nonprofit communications, development, and event activities. She has served on multiple nonprofit boards in the Wake County community. Elaine graduated from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill with a bachelor's degree in economics and received her Juris Doctorate from the University of North Carolina School of Law. She currently serves on the board of managers of the Connected Community. Elaine has had a lifetime of love for dancing, starting with ballet as a young child, and more recently, ballroom dancing as an adult. Elaine has competed in pro-am ballroom dance competitions with her instructor. Her favorite dance? Hard to choose, but it's the elegant waltz. Elaine is the proud mom of 3 fur babies, Izzy, Max, and Ziva. She enjoys staying active, which has kept her connected to friends during the pandemic. She has a regular walking group and does boot camp workouts with Camp Gladiator. Well, I think we're ready for this match, right? Welcome to Community Connections, Elaine. You are certainly a woman well connected to community needs and activities.
Well, thank you, Sonia. I'm happy to be here to share more information about the Center for Volunteer Caregiving and what we're doing in the community.
Great. So let's start. Please offer our listening audience some history and background about the Center for Volunteer Caregiving.
So the center is almost 30 years old. We were founded by a gentleman in Cary, North Carolina, who saw a need for an organization to help communities of faith organize their caregiving missions and programs. Over the course of the 30 years, we've really developed into a completely community-based organization. And what that means is, while we have relationships and partnerships with communities of faith, most of the referrals that we are getting and the volunteers who are coming to us to help us provide our services are coming to us from the community at large and not specifically a community of faith. So we are an organization serving folks who live in Wake County, all of the townships and cities in Wake County.
Well, that's quite a large area since Wake County is the largest of the 100 counties in North Carolina. That sounds like a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, and you don't realize how big our county is until you drive from Fuquay Varina to Wake Forest. It is a long way, and there are a lot of stoplights between the two.
I know. I've driven it. So tell me, how has the combination of law and volunteerism enhanced the work you've done in the past and in your position as executive director?
So my background in law, people, I think, are surprised to hear that I use what I learned both in law school and as a practicing lawyer just about every day. It gives you a framework for how to look at things, and I think I'm by nature a very detailed person, which comes in handy in my role here as executive director. You got to pay attention to the details. And certainly my background, both as a volunteer and as a volunteer manager, gives me the insight I need to run an organization whose services are 100% provided by volunteers. So without volunteers, we don't have programs. So understanding that piece of it is very important, and it certainly comes in handy in my role here at the Center for Volunteer Caregiving.
Well, especially now during COVID, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what criteria makes a person eligible to receive caregiving services?
So the services that the Center for Volunteer Caregiving provides are what we called unskilled services. Our focus is people who are living independently. That could be in a home, in an apartment, or in an independent living section of a retirement or senior community. We are not serving people who are in nursing homes or assisted living. Our goal is to help folks who are aging alone and in place, and to give them a bit of support to help them, because as you get older, it just gets tougher to do things. And we're here to provide volunteer assistance to help make living in your own home a little bit easier. Wow. We serve folks who are 60 years of age or older, and we also serve people who are younger than 60 who have a documented disability.
I see. So as an example, what would you do? What would a volunteer come and do in the home of somebody who was 73? Maybe a little housework or?
Well, it depends. We have, I think your next question is about programs, but it makes sense for me to talk about that in the context of this.
Please do.
We have three distinct programs here. Our first program is transportation. So we have volunteer drivers who drive folks to medical appointments, dental appointments, and then also what we call basic needs shopping. So that could be a trip to the grocery store, to a pharmacy, to a bank. Occasionally we have somebody who needs a ride to a legal office to take care of some legal business. So our focus in the transportation program is access to health care and access to food and medications. We want to make sure that people have a way to get there. And our volunteer drivers are a friendly way to get there. They're using their own vehicles. We don't own a vehicle or a bus, so our volunteers use their own cars to do the transportation, and it's escorted. The volunteer, this is not a taxi service. The volunteer is there the whole way. If you need help in the grocery store, pushing the cart, or getting things off the shelf, the volunteer is there to help out. So that's our transportation program. Our largest program is what we call in-home connections. So these are in-home services that our volunteers are providing, and that can include something as simple as a friendly visit, just somebody to stop by and have a friendly chat. It could be a little light housekeeping. It could be help reading your mail and sorting through paperwork. And we have quite a few clients who are visually impaired who have paperwork assistance. And then it could also include, and especially during the pandemic, telephone reassurance calls. So instead of somebody coming by the home, they actually just check in with you one, two, three times a week to see how you're doing, see if you need anything. And then a service that has really taken off during the pandemic is our grocery shopping. So for folks who don't want to ride to the store but want somebody to actually go do the grocery shopping for them, our volunteers will do that.
Well, that sounds very, very inclusive. But as an attorney, I want to ask you, the people who drive, how are they insured? How is the passenger protected? How are they protected?
So they're protected in a number of ways. One, we have insurance. We have what's called a non-owned policy, and it effectively acts like an umbrella coverage. So the volunteer driver's insurance would kick in first if there's an accident, and then our policy would kick in if for some reason they were uninsured, which they shouldn't be. When we onboard volunteers, we actually get a copy, get proof that they have insurance. And then also in North Carolina, there is a law that protects volunteers from liability. It's called the Good Samaritan Law.
The Good Samaritan Law, okay. Because these people are being Good Samaritans and volunteering their time, their abilities, their gas to help other people. So that,
exactly.
Yeah, that makes
exactly.
a lot of sense.
I can tell you that of course, I've only been here about 3 years, but I have access to all of our records for the past 30 years, and I have not seen any indication that we've ever had to make a claim on our insurance or that there's been an accident. Our drivers are very safe. When we onboard our volunteers, we do a background check. We check their criminal history. We verify their Social Security status and number. And we also run a driver's record check. And our drivers, to be able to provide a driving service, they have to have a clean driving record for at least 2 years and cannot have something like a DUI on their record. Our volunteer drivers, we check them out, we vet them, and our record is pretty good for them being safe drivers.
So I'm going to throw this at you. The drivers, are they also seniors? And in the pandemic, have you found younger people keeping busy by volunteering in this manner?
We have volunteers of all ages. And I like to call the age of 50 to 70 our volunteer sweet spot. That is where we find the most volunteers who stay with us the longest. A lot of our younger volunteers may volunteer for a few months, and then they get busy with their job or their family, and they just quite simply don't have time. But residents in our county who are in that 50 to 70 age range, they've either retired or they're sort of downshifting in their own career and they have extra time. They may have families, children who are now living on their own, starting their own families, so they're not taking kids to ballet class and soccer and music lessons, so they have a lot more time on their hands.
Okay.
So we find that they stick around longer as volunteers.
That's good. So I said we would get back to COVID in a minute, and here we are. Mm-hmm. During the pandemic, the services that you provide seem particularly essential. Mm-hmm. So how do you get around all the CDC guidelines of social distancing? Because if they take a passenger in the front seat with a mask, I imagine, or maybe the passenger sits in the back seat of a vehicle, mm-hmm. it's a little challenging, is it not?
It is, because when somebody's in your car, of course, there's only so far apart you can be, and you're in a contained space. We've asked both our volunteers and the care, our care recipients that if at any time they don't feel well, they have a fever, they have a sniffle, for whatever reason, that they not engage in volunteer our volunteer services. We asked everybody to wear a mask at all times, use lots of hand sanitizer, and we've asked our volunteer drivers to wipe down the seat where the care recipient will be sitting, just wipe it down with a sanitizing wipe, just to double check. And when possible, maintain some social distance. Okay. So we're asking people to still adhere to the three W's that we've heard our governor and Secretary Cohen talk about a lot. But whenever you're providing a personal service or personal contact, sometimes it's just not possible to maintain 6+ feet apart.
Yeah, that's a little.
We ask our volunteers to
a little more
use
upfront,
their best judgment.
Upfront and personal.
Exactly.
Because it is
and the,
personal.
And the nature of our services are personal.
Yes.
What happens oftentimes with our volunteers is they and our care recipients, they become friends. Some of them even think of each other as family. And this is the time when you sort of huddle up with your family, and when you consider somebody to be family, you're not going to leave them in a lurch. You want to continue to help them out. We've seen with COVID, we have seen a number of people who felt like they were at high risk, maybe switch from a friendly visit to a telephone call instead, or instead of getting a ride to the grocery store, our volunteer actually does the shopping for them or goes to the pharmacy and picks up their medications. We've tried to maintain flexibility, give people clear guidelines for protecting their health as well as our care recipients' health. And it certainly remained available for any questions or to help people work through any sticky situations.
I see. Well, you have described some of the qualifications that the volunteers have to meet, especially about the driving and how they are vetted with a check on their driver's license and proof of insurance. So tell me this part. How are they recruited?
So we recruit volunteers from community engagement activities, which have been somewhat curtailed during the pandemic. We're not able to get out into the community as much and talk to groups or put flyers in retail stores or restaurants. But we are active on social media, and we find a lot of volunteers find us just through Googling. They Google volunteer opportunities in Wake County, and we pop up pretty high on the Google result list because volunteer is in the name of our organization. So we find, even though the name of our organization is a little clunky, it seems to be one of our greatest Google assets. So a lot of volunteers find us on the web, and we have a lot of information on our website about volunteering with us, and that's how a lot of volunteers get started.
I imagine some are word of mouth. Someone said, gee, I'm going to start volunteering for the Center for Volunteer Caregiving, and somebody says, well, I have some time. Maybe I'll do that as well. So kind of word of mouth might be another option.
Very much so. In fact, a great example of that, we have a new board member. His name is David Goldstein, and he was telling his sister that he was going to be on our board, and she said, wait a minute, I've never heard of this organization. And when he told her what we did, she immediately signed up to be a volunteer. So we seem to be a well-kept secret. And I think one of the reasons for that is there's not an organization like ours in every community. We're actually a bit of a unicorn. And because of that, people don't, when they need support as they're aging in place and they need someone to come in and help them change the bed sheets and run the vacuum cleaner or just hang out with them because they're feeling isolated, they don't think to look for us because there's just not that many agencies like us. So fortunately, we are partners with other organizations in our community like Resources for Seniors, Meals on Wheels, Transitions Life Care, Dementia Alliance of North Carolina. So we get a lot of referrals through those partner, community partner agencies, as well as medical providers. We're trying to get the word out to doctors who treat older adults and let them know that we're here and what we provide. And I should say, we have one more program that I haven't described, and that's our caregiver support program. In that program, we have volunteers who will provide a respite visit for a family caregiver who's taking care of a loved one 24/7 who just needs a break. While we don't provide any support for activities of daily living like toileting, bathing, feeding, dressing, but our volunteer can certainly hang out with the care recipient and make sure they don't get into harm's way while their family caregiver, whether it's an adult child or a spouse or a relative, whoever, so they can just get out and get a break. It's challenging to be a family caregiver. In addition to those respite services, we provide a six-week course called Powerful Tools for Caregivers. We're doing it virtually now, but typically we do it live. And we also have quite a few virtual opportunities, such as weekly meditation calls. We're running a music respite. We have a every other week yoga and stretching for family caregivers class. And information about that is on our website.
I've heard of that caregiver workshop running about 6 weeks. Did you do that through the Office of the Aging?
No. Powerful Tools for Caregivers was actually created by a group in Oregon. It's an evidence-based course, and we have three staff members who are trained on staff to do it. So we do it independently of the Division of Aging and Adult Services.
Okay, because I heard of one that was given by the Office of the Aging, and it was held at the Y down in Raleigh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, you certainly have a very diverse and very necessary type of program, so I hope that people who are listening to Community Connections today will avail themselves of this service that you provide. And a little later on, we'll give you an opportunity to tell them how to get involved. So here's a good question for you. Just describe to me, and remember, I know that you've done it too, the qualities of a terrific volunteer. What makes them terrific?
Our terrific volunteers are dedicated. They show up when they say they're going to show up. They tell us when they've been on visits, and they just care. They have a passion and a deep care for the adults who need our services.
Okay. That makes for a terrific person.
Yep. All the way around.
Okay. So we're coming pretty close to the end of our program. You've been fascinating with all this information. Very quickly, if you could just tell me, because in many of my interviews with folks in the community who are making a difference, passion is usually mentioned. What strikes a chord in you about this seemingly necessary ingredient for success?
Well, passion overrides your other obligations. When you're passionate about something, you are always looking to make sure that you are there, meeting whatever goals are a part of that passion. you know, it's one of the reasons why I stopped practicing law and turned my attentions to working with nonprofits. I had a passion for it. It was, those were the first emails I looked at in the morning. And I finally said, well, this is silly. I should be doing that as my career, not practicing law. So, you know, a passion drives what you want to do and how you'll follow through with it. And that's why volunteers with a passion are our best volunteers.
Okay. So also briefly, in connection with what you just said, can you describe the reward that you have learned about from other volunteers?
Well, our volunteer services are very personal. We ask our volunteers to essentially form a friendship with an older adult or an adult with disabilities. And we've heard from our volunteers that they're not sure who's really getting more benefits, them or the care recipient. The volunteers, especially our younger volunteers, learn how much they can learn from an older adult who has had many life experiences. And once they get to know them and talk to them and listen to them, they understand how much they have to learn and how much they can grow from the relationship that they have with the older adult.
Well, now we come to the part of the program, Elaine, when you can tell our listening audience the phone number and your website so that people who are listening today might want to volunteer. Please tell us about the website and the phone number.
So if you want to volunteer, or if you are interested in our services, either one, call 919-460-0567. That's our main number. And we do have staff in the offices every weekday, so we are answering the phone. Our website is www.volunteercaregiving.org. And you can find more information about our services. Check the calendar if you're interested in any of the caregiver support programs I mentioned. And we also have a volunteer page all about volunteering with us. And you can actually sign up to volunteer with us right on that page.
Well, Elaine, you have really been a most charming and informative guest. I thank you so much for sharing with us today. And best of luck with all the volunteers that you work with. Time for this month's episode of Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Sonia Usech-Kuhn for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.